This is Cool Science Radio. I'm Lynn Ware Peak, here with John Wells. We were just speaking with Michael Wall, who is a senior writer for space.com. His book is Out There, A Scientific Guide to Alien Life, Antimatter, and Human Space Travel for the Cosmically Curious. Now we shift gears. Our next guest is Dr. Ross McPhee. He's the curator and paleomammalogist at the American Museum of Natural History in New York City. He's written a new book called The End of the Megafauna, The Fate of the World's Hugest, Fiercest, and Strangest Animals. Thousands of years ago, up until around the time that the first humans began to populate North America, the Earth was populated by fantastical creatures, mastodons, giant Irish deer, gorgon, hippopotami, and so on. And then for some reason, these animals died off. The explanation for this extinction on a mass scale is one of the great mysteries of natural science. Dr. McPhee is with us to help us understand who these animals were and what happened to them. Good morning to you. Thanks for joining us, Dr. McPhee.
Good morning to you and John. It's a great pleasure to be here.
Well, I just want to start with this. I would love to see a giant land sloth. I mean, out of all the animals that you portray, all the megafauna, I love sloth, and I'd love to see a large one. So what happened to the last giant land sloth?
You have a good soul. I agree with you. The sloths were wonderful. There were dozens of species that lived in comparatively recent times, and all of them, with the exception of the two tree sloths, which are very small creatures indeed, disappeared probably as recently as 10,000 years ago. That may sound like a lot, but from a paleontological perspective, it really isn't. It's just yesterday.
Yeah, well, I would say that the giant land sloth, I mean, if he moves anything like the tree sloths, I can see why he became extinct. It doesn't have to have anything to do with an asteroid, that they just move so slowly. But anyway, sloths.
That's one of the many things that we don't know. There is no reason, in fact, to believe that the ground sloths, the really big guys that came in at 2,000 to 4,000 kilograms, were all that slow. And from many perspectives, they seem to have just been downright successful. They originated in South America, but got into North America at least 9 million years ago. Several species did, and they prospered. In warm periods, they made it all the way up to Alaska and Yukon. So their disappearance as relatively large, well-distributed species is another kind of mystery altogether. Why should all of them have disappeared and relatively suddenly only 10 to 11,000 years ago?
Dr. McPhee, the book is beautifully illustrated. Not only is it informative, but these illustrations are incredible. And I just want to mention they were illustrated by Peter Shouten. Can you tell us about him a little bit?
Yes, he's Australian. He's a very well-known wildlife illustrator. But one of the things that he's been interested in for many years is extinct animals of all sorts. He particularly is interested in extinct birds, which are a big part of the disappeared fauna of Australia and New Zealand down in the South Pacific. He has had several illustrated books of the same sort that you're looking at right now with professional collaborators like me who are interested in presenting our science, but through a vehicle that is not just print. We want people to look at these animals, to adore these animals, to wonder what the heck happened to them.
Well, you're talking about, if he's interested in birds, the giant elephant bird, up to 500 pounds, lays eggs that are, 3 feet in circumference. A very unusual looking bird. Can you talk about this bird?
Sure. I found many fossils of that bird in Madagascar when I worked there some years ago. It was evidently very common, and our basis for thinking that is that there's certain beaches in southern Madagascar in particular that are literally carpeted with remains of elephant bird eggshells. You can tell that they're elephant bird because they're extremely thick. Even when they're in the broken state, you can still sort out who belonged to what. We don't know a great deal about their behavior or anything of that sort, because the first humans they encountered were pre-literate. And what we have been able to divine in recent times is based on morphology. And one of the interesting things is that these birds might have been semi-blind and perhaps active at night, which you don't kind of imagine for something that's two or three times the size of an ostrich. You think, okay, something that's as big as that can be up at all hours whenever it pleases. But it seems that for reasons that we don't know, it was not very, very active during the day. Now, like the rest of the large vertebrate fauna of Madagascar, elephant birds seem to have disappeared roughly around 1,000 years ago. I say roughly because our only way of knowing that is through radiocarbon dating or the equivalent. There's lots of sites for these extinct vertebrates. It's not like they're rare. And it's clear that something very bad happened, probably relatively quickly, to them. And the mystery is what that was.
Right. Well, let's talk a little bit about the five mass extinctions and pretty accepted that today we're going through a sixth extinction. But those great purges occurred about 450 million years ago, 375 million years ago, 251 million years ago, 200 million years ago, and 66 million years ago when that great asteroid came and wiped out, about 75% of all of Earth's species. What, for you, are the biggest questions remaining about those extinctions? And, this is in large part what you're presenting to us in this book.
Well, for the big five, as we like to call them, there's been a lot of work done in the past 20 or 30 years trying to sort out exactly what happened. You mentioned the impactor of 66 million, which took out the dinosaurs and probably about 75% of everything else that was living at the time. For a while, it was thought, okay, most of these big, big losses must be due to something very similar, to an extraterrestrial hit from a comet or an asteroid. But as time has gone on, and new techniques have been developed to divine what happened at these time periods, it looks like, in fact, most of the big losses are connected with terrestrial processes, things that happen all the time on planet Earth, but scaled up to an enormous extent. So, for example, the biggest extinction of all time, as far as we can gauge, was the one happening at 252 million years ago, called the late Permian extinction. And that was really drastic. It's been estimated that up to 95% of all marine taxa species died out at that time. It had equivalent effects on land as well. So you're talking about a very dramatic series of losses. Now, what could have caused that? People looked for an impactor, but were unsuccessful in doing so. And then a few years ago, it was suggested, well, at the time of the extinction, the Earth was undergoing a bout of enormous volcanic activity, especially in northern Asia, creating something called the Siberian Traps, although it occurred elsewhere as well. And because of the nature of those particular volcanic events, it seems that there was an enormous amount of toxic gases released, not just carbon dioxide, but sulfuric oxide, several others, which, it is argued, had a whole lot of knock-on effects. First of all, it made the planet as a whole very much warmer than it had been. The acidity clearly affected the oceans, resulting in marine extinctions. It probably came to be that for the land vertebrates, just with the extremely toxic gases coming on and all of these other climatically induced events, that they weren't able to survive very long thereafter as well. So it was a huge impact, but in this case due to volcanic processes of the same sort that we're familiar with today, but at a very different scale. Some of the other extinctions are still very obscure, even more obscure than one I just described. We don't know the connection between the losses and what actually happened in detail. We can point to this, we can point to that, but really imagining or even being able to test ideas about what precisely happened is still elusive.
These massive influences, volcanic activity, asteroids, ice age, climate change in general, all make a lot of sense about erasing and making extinct some of the megafauna. But one thing I was sort of surprised to see in the book was about overpredation of the megafauna. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes, this is what makes the megafaunal extinctions, or the extinctions in near time, as we're increasingly calling them, ones that happened in the last 50,000 years, very different from anything else that happened in Earth history. And it all has to do with us, with Homo sapiens, are spread across the planet, and it seems the kinds of things we did in the new places that we arrived in. Paul Martin was a professor at the University of Arizona for many years and a very influential thinker in near-time extinctions. And he was the one that really pushed the idea of a common cause for all of these losses. They didn't all happen at once. They happened in at different times in different places. So we're not talking probably about an asteroid. We're not talking about toxic gases, for which there's no evidence. We're not talking about acidification in the oceans. Something else had to have been going on. And as he looked at the evidence, it struck him that there was a very close correlation for at least some of them between the first arrival of people in places where they hadn't been previously resident, and all of these losses. The set of losses that he concentrated on initially were ones in North and South America. When he first started working on this back in the 60s, the radiocarbon record was quite limited, but it looked as though somewhere around 12,000 years ago, people first came to this continent, and right thereafter, within 1,000 years, all of the species that you mentioned in your intro had disappeared. The mammoths, the mastodons, the giant ground sloths, the 100-kilogram rodents, and so on and so on, leading up to something like 110 mammal losses alone, with an equivalent number of birds in North and South America within a very short period of time, perhaps a millennium. So it was the correspondence in human arrival and loss. He suggested that this must be due to something like overhunting or overkill, or as he preferred to call it later on, blitzkrieg. Blitzkrieg, for anybody my age, has a very specific meaning. That's what happened in the Second World War with German units that were sent into various places to very quickly cause all opposition to them to go away. And the idea with blitzkrieg in the natural history context is that these early hunters would have been able to kill without any letter hindrance until they had literally killed out everything that was in front of them. Now, how could this possibly happen? For this to work, Martin had to make another inference. This is called prey naivete, or behavioral naivete. And the idea, I think, will be familiar to most people. The idea is that with wild animals, if they've never seen humans, never dealt with humans in any way, are not going to know what we're all about when we show up. We're very awkward-looking. We're stumbling around on our hind legs. We have no armament that's obvious, at least, that we're carrying. So the idea would be that the mammoths and the mastodons and so forth that first greeted humans when they came over from Asia over the Bering Land Bridge wouldn't have thought anything about it. According to Martin's idea, this meant absolute Armageddon for the big mammals. It made them very easy to hunt. And since there was no limitations on bag size, the idea is that humans kept hunting without any regard to whether they were overhunting or any of the things that we might be concerned about today, eventually resulting in complete extinction of so many species. This idea has been very severely challenged, as you might imagine. How could it be not only that species would neglect to notice people for long enough that they were absolutely exterminated. But how could it happen in case after case after case within such a short period of time, 1,000 years in Martin's notion? Since then, there's been various improvements to the fossil record, to the radiocarbon record, and also just to the record of extinctions all over the planet. It's no longer just about North and South America. It's literally everywhere where we've been able to look. In the case of North America, the big deal is that we're increasingly getting earlier and earlier dates for human arrival. We're now up around 16,000 minimally, less conservative people than me would suggest they were probably here on the order of 20,000 and even earlier. That's a problem for Martin's argument, because if people were here earlier, then the tolerance of the megafauna for the presence of people, let alone killing them, would have been lessened, and it makes it harder to understand how the humans could have been so successful in such a short period of time, if the time period is getting increasingly longer.
Right.
That's one side of it. The other side of it is that in other places on the planet, the consequences of human arrival and extinction are even starker than they were in the Americas. Not so much in necessarily so much in the number of species that got lost, but just with the rapidity at which it happened. Let me give you a couple of examples. People got to Madagascar, we think, although this is currently controversial, about 2,000 years ago. Even though that island off Southeast Africa is only 400 kilometers from the mainland, it seems that people didn't get there any earlier than that. Nonetheless, within about 1,000 years of their arrival, a whole flock of large mammals, birds, and reptiles disappeared. This included not only the elephant bird that John and I were talking about, but giant lemurs that in some cases were almost gorilla-sized. It included large tortoises. It included crocodiles. It was across the whole size landscape, and they seemed to have disappeared again very rapidly. And the newest thing on the horizon was the arrival of people. 2,000 years ago was long after the ice ages. At that period of time, conditions were very much as they are today. So you can't invoke climate change. In the case of New Zealand, you have something that's possibly even more dramatic in terms of how quickly the extinctions went on. It's been suggested on the basis of radiocarbon evidence and a lot of data crunching that people first got to New Zealand about 1200 AD, very recently indeed. And maybe within 50 to 100 years, all of the large birds that lived there, which are collectively known as moa, some of them were almost the size of elephant birds, all of them had disappeared, along with lots of other creatures. Mammals, apart from bats, never got to New Zealand, or at least were unsuccessful there. So it's not a mammalian extinction. It's largely an avian extinction. But the pattern is once again the same. And you can replicate that again and again over almost all of the world's islands. The islands have lost more collectively than the mainlands have during these near-time extinctions. So what do you do with such evidence? It looks like people were on the scene, whether or not it was due to overhunting or to something that we really have no idea about at present, it seems that their presence was instrumental to inducing these losses.
And certainly involved in the sixth extinction as well. If you're just joining us on Cool Science Radio, we're having a conversation with Dr. Ross McPhee. He's the curator and paleomammalogist at the American Museum of Natural History in New York City. He's written The End of the Megafauna, The Fate of the World's Hugest, Fiercest, and Strangest Animals. I wanted to mention I moderated a panel at a futures conference, and the panel was on the health of our oceans. And Roger Payne was one of the panel members. He's the guy that discovered that whales sing, and he's been working with whales and he's a conservationist on the oceans for many, many years. And
sure.
Basically, as the oceans become more acidic and they have more CO2 in them, our plants in the ocean, of which we have many, through the process of photosynthesis, convert that CO2 into oxygen. And he said that he believed that for every four breaths that we take, if we're living by the ocean or if we're living in Buffalo, New York, for every four breaths, two of those breaths we can attribute and we can thank the oceans for, because they are, you know, making that oxygen. And the plant life is dying in our oceans. And he said that, and I'm not saying that this is going to happen, but he said that if all the plant life died in the ocean, it would be akin to living about 150 meters above the top of Mount Everest, the peak of Everest. And we couldn't live up there because there's not a lot of oxygen. So,
for many reasons. Yes.
For lots of reasons. So could that possibly have something to do with these extinctions? It could have something to do with the one we're in right now. But do you think that's possible for some of these previous extinctions? And Dr. McPhee, I'm sorry to interrupt, but we only have about a minute left and we're going to have to wrap. But so if you could just maybe give us a brief answer.
Sure. He presented evidence, and this is still the evidence that everybody points to, that these extinctions were not globally synchronous. They went on over a period of about 50,000 years. And some of the worst were right at the start. Some of the other not so bad were in the middle, and so forth. So there's no obvious natural cause, except for the arrival of people, that we can point to in case after case after case. So I don't think that it was sort of a global issue like the one you outlined for the lungs of the planet, namely the oceans. I do think that we're still missing the full explanation of what went on, which is why it's a mystery and why it continues to be so compelling. People like me want to know what happened, because we think there really is something in these prehistoric extinctions that can bring to light what's going on now and possibly in the future.
Our guest is Dr. Ross McPhee. He's a paleomammalogist with the American Museum of Natural History in New York City, where I might add you have worked since 1988. It shows your incredible passion for what you do. And your new book is The End of the Megafauna, The Fate of the World's Hugest, Fiercest, and Strangest Animals, with illustrations by Peter Schouten. And we're so glad you could join us today, Ross. Thank you.
It's a huge pleasure. Thank you.
All right. Take care.